Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. Well, coming up on today's podcast, we have an interview with Cherry Jones from Doubt. She will be talking to Ann Nicholson Weber about the show, and of course, you don't want to miss this interview. We also have an audio review of Doubt, and of course, as always, Chicago's theater news. So sit back and relax, and get ready to talk some theater.
Hello, you're listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. I'm your host for this week's segment, Ann Nicholson Weber. And I'm very honored to be here today with Cherry Jones, who is starring in the touring production of Doubt, which is here at the LaSalle Theater for a fairly short run. Welcome, Cherry Jones.
Thank you, Ann.
When you first read a script, I imagine that you have a picture of a character in your mind, and the character may not be someone that right away you can see how you will play, how that person fits you. And I'm interested in how you go about creating a version, in this case of the nun, Sister Aloysius, who fits you but is still somehow in essence that person that you saw in the text.
Well, I think I do start both externally and internally. I mean, there's always the debate with actors, which way do you begin? But I think most of us truthfully begin simultaneously. I don't quite know how you do it any other way. And I sometimes start with something as simple as posture. Mm-hmm. And I knew quickly with Sister Aloysius, for some reason, I thought, I don't want her to have ramrod, straight, nun posture. I want her to be somehow broken, mm-hmm. a bit broken by life. And I couldn't quite figure out why she and her husband had not had children. And I decided at some point that she had had a hysterectomy as a young woman. And so she actually was suffering from osteoporosis. So she was actually quite frail physically, but with this burning, you know, will inside. So it became more interesting to me, those contrasts of this burning will and this failing shell, you know. And
so are you seeing a version of yourself? Are you seeing yourself as Sister Aloysius when you first read it?
No. I think I was trying to get her emotional rhythms and her muscularity, and because when you read a script, that's what I usually get, are the emotional rhythms of a person, and because of that, how they breathe, and because of how they breathe, how they stand, and because of how they stand, what their muscles have become like through the years, but without ever thinking that specifically, but it's always sort of in the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. And then, because I remember I did when I did Hannah Jelks at the Goodman, yeah, with Robert Falls and company, I was so intimidated of that role because she was such an extraordinary person and such an intellect and such a blazing soul on this earth. And I couldn't figure out how to even begin to approach her, mm-hmm. internally or externally, really. So I relied heavily on the externals and decided maybe if I build her a home, uh-huh. that I think is worthy of her, she will come.
So just physically in your body, if
yes.
I can create
something. If I can
who feels
create
like
something that feels like her, maybe mm-hmm. she will slowly start to inhabit it. And that really, that was a wonderful way to approach something that's that intimidating. Mm-hmm. I just took away the pressure of trying to figure her out completely, and just started building her this external home. And then, of course, the other starts to,
appears.
It starts somehow to come together. Yes, yes. Who knows how?
Yeah. Well, when you started with Sister Aloysius, what was the most daunting thing about this role? What were the scenes that you had to work hardest to find a way into, or the aspects of her that you felt weren't accessible to you right away?
I think I worried that I wasn't going to be able to capture her authority.
Mm-hmm.
And because I've not been known for playing roles with great authority, characters who have great authority. And I'm usually sort of the victim or the preyed upon one or the, you know, but now that I'm 50, that's going to change.
Uh-huh.
And so I was really daunted by that. And of course, like most of us, I also wanted the audience to understand my character, mm-hmm. and which is a real pitfall. I really wanted them to understand her noble mm-hmm. soul, you know. And it was Doug Hughes, the brilliant director, Mr. Hughes, who kept encouraging me to make her increasingly appalling mm-hmm. to this Methodist from Tennessee, you know. And in fact, it was important for me, obviously, to embrace those flaws in this woman. And once I started embracing her flaws, then I really started to fall in love with playing someone who is so hot-tempered and so emotionally mm-hmm. charged that she's not in control of herself. She is out of control in many of those scenes, particularly with the priest.
Mm-hmm.
She's not approaching this from an intellectual place. It's just pure, you know, white hot emotion.
Yeah,
which is so much fun to play. And at the same time, though, I really am playing the classically male role in the play, and the priest is playing the classically female role in the play, because in a way, Aloysius, even though she's not in control of her own emotions, she's often in control of the situation because she keeps finding an upper hand,
mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
know. So it's an interesting.
Well, that brings up another dynamic. To me very interesting theme in the play, which is the gender politics kind of, and in this very hierarchical world that they're in, she is Father Flynn, her antagonist, is also her superior, and. There's a scene that the audience, the night I saw it, audibly gasped when there's a meeting between the two of those two characters, and Father Flynn sits in Sister Aloysius's chair. It's her office. She's called the meeting. He comes in and sits in her chair. And it was quite shocking, actually, now to me, not coming up in such a hierarchical world or not in that time. But more importantly, the heart of her conviction is intuition, which is a kind of a feminine trait. I mean, she's male in the sense that she's making things happen in this play. She's not the victim.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the play was also in part about facts, which is kind of a typically male analytical way of mm-hmm. approaching a problem, versus her intuition. There's really no other word for where her conviction comes from, is there?
Well, I mean, this is where you get into the brilliant balance of the play. John Shanley, our playwright, has given Aloysius just one line that tells the audience what she has seen.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, even within that line, it's very ambiguous. And the audience cannot really know. It's very understated is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And so the audience from that line still cannot know what she saw. She doesn't go into any great description.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't describe how the child reacted, how the priest responded. She doesn't go into any description because she doesn't need to, because she's talking to the priest himself.
Right.
But that's a real disadvantage for Aloysius to make her case to the audience.
Right.
And I had to. I'm going off on a tangent here.
It's okay.
Anne,
tangents
sorry,
are good.
But I had to give myself just a whopping backstory
mm-hmm.
So that when she sees what she sees, which is very damning, and I've made this up. I've had to create what she saw and when she saw it and what the weather was like around it and the wind was blowing. And I mean, every night I see so clearly that moment. And so I don't really think it is intuition.
I see what you're saying.
I think it is. It's beyond intuition. I think mm-hmm. she has experience and knowledge of that child and how that child behaves. And I think it really is beyond intuition. I would argue that point with the...
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Well, that's another interesting point for me about Aloysius. She is so canny. She's so worldly wise in an interesting way for someone who you think of as having been sequestered as a nun, although the playwright lets us know that she's been married. She's had sexual experience.
Again, a wonderful balancing point.
Right, right. She's not an hysteric. She's, you know, there's... And most of the early scenes, many of the earlier scenes are with the true innocent, this other character, Sister James. And she just knows more. She says things and you say, yeah, right, that's true. You know, she really is getting it. Then there's this incredible to me scene with Mrs. Muller, who is the mother of the boy whom Sister Aloysius thinks has perhaps been abused, or, well, Sister Aloysius knows has been abused in her mind by Father Flynn. And something for me shifts in the play at that point, because Mrs. Muller is the first character she's come up against who in some ways knows more about how the world works than she does. I mean, Mrs. Muller has had terrible experiences, is in a terrible situation. And I wondered what happens to your character when for the first time she finds herself interacting with someone who she can't best in the sense of just knowing she knows more. Do you know what I'm asking?
Well, I do think she's wise enough to appreciate that she's dealing with someone who knows more than she does. And yet, she knows more about this woman's son's situation. And it's driving her crazy.
Yeah.
It is the most frustrating of scenes for Aloysius, because she's backed into a corner by this mother's love of her son and this woman's. It's hard to talk about this for people who haven't seen the play without giving things away.
Right.
But I think, and I would like to just speak for a moment about how difficult it was as an actor to figure out. She again is so harsh with this woman. And I was having a really hard time with it. There's a moment where the woman is asking, basically pleading for her son's life in a way, and Aloysius basically just says, "I'll try." You know, there's a very dry line at one point in that scene, and I was struggling with it and making it sentimental and, you know, trying to show again how, you know, and it was Doug Hughes again who said, no, it's got to be a very dry, cut and dried response. He said, this is a woman whose husband has died in World War II fighting the Nazis. This is a woman who watched the only way they could rid the earth of the Nazis was to grind Dresden into dust, grind Cologne into dust, Berlin into dust. And that is how you deal with evil, and that's how you root it out. And that if it takes two soldiers today going behind enemy lines to save 500 tomorrow, you sacrifice those two, you know. And so...
A certain ruthlessness.
A ruthlessness.
Yeah.
Which again goes back to that amazing line that she has about... When you take a step to address wrongdoing, you are taking a step away from God,
right?
But in His service, you know, this play is really quite astounding. I think it's so simple and so lean and spare, and yet it touches on, you know, so many of our deepest struggles as human beings.
It really detonates a lot of things.
It really does.
You played this role for a long time on Broadway. How long was the run?
Between Manhattan Theater Club and Broadway, I remember exactly 452 performances.
A lot of Sister Aloysius. And then you went and did Faith Healer with Ray Fiennes while this role was taken over by Eileen Atkins. And now you're coming back to it after a break of how long?
About 9 months, I guess.
9 months.
8 or 9 months.
So... One question is, what happens when you come back to a role after a break? Do you see things differently? Do you do things differently just because you've been away from it?
I think I did. And we rehearsed across the hall from the same rehearsal space that we rehearsed in originally. And it was so wonderful to be back in that tiny little rehearsal room and with a very different set of actors.
Right.
Chris McGarry and Lisa Joyce are just extraordinary performers. They get right to it, and they have amazing chops, and mm-hmm. they're very comfortable in being. They're very exposed. They're mm-hmm. very open. They're very natural, and it's just beautiful watching them with these roles, and very delicate and. And O'Brien and I were, you know, these big old theatrical hams,
he played Father Flynn.
He played Father Flynn
in
New York,
right.
And so it was interesting for me to have to figure out how to keep her drive and the theatricality, which I think is also a part of this woman. She is kind of theatrical, and yet sculpt my performance now more to Lisa and Chris's, and I still don't feel that I've completely accomplished that yet. Mm-hmm. It was much easier in a smaller room,
mm-hmm.
and I was enjoying it so much. And then we got into these vast spaces that we've been playing. I mean,
right.
The first one was 2,000, which is the Amundsen, but unlike the LaSalle, which is almost 2,000. Because the LaSalle was built in 1906, the seats are very close together, and the Amundsen, you can stretch out and, you know, take a nap. And the other space has been 2,800 and 3,000, and I think it's pushed me back up into a greater theatricality, and I've lost some of the subtlety that I had gained going back to it. And
with these different actors,
yeah.
Is it possible to be specific about what that means when you said that their performances were more delicate and you needed to sculpt yours to match them? Is it? Can you give examples at all of what that specifically entails?
Well, it's hard because I still stay true to the blueprint for Aloysius. But there are moments when Chris does a wonderful thing, which Brian used to, which was equally wonderful, just different. Brian would twist a theoretical villain's mustache when he'd feel the audience too much on his side, and then he could turn into, you know, little Mary Sunshine when he
needed to
felt
pull them back,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So he was doing an ongoing manipulation, yes, with the audience. I could never really do that because she needs to stay, you know, this rigid, certain arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And if I start manipulating too much, then it loses its spine a little bit.
Yeah.
Chris, on the other hand, is very sly in that he remains this very neutral, certainly charming, passionate, wonderful man, but with a neutrality, a bit of a mask,
mm-hmm,
that the audience can then
project on. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is very interesting.
Yeah.
It is not as much of a brick wall at times that Brian would, you know, I mean, we would
give you something to butt against.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's, but it is in its, his neutrality increases my frustration, though,
uh-huh,
because
uh-huh,
I see him
kind of jujitsu.
So, yes.
There's no way for your energy to come back or
yeah,
get lost.
You know, so it's really, I mean, it's fun that way because uh-huh, it's, so I have to try different ways to make my point when he appears to be so innocent,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But it doesn't help me to then become softer. It only helps me to become even more certain and more rigid.
Driving.
It's
mm-hmm,
funny, there were times early on Broadway when I would start to try to soften her a little bit, thinking I needed to win over more people. And mm-hmm, I would try to just a touch. And we were collecting for Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS, at one point. And we would – it's wonderful when you collect for Broadway Cares as actors because you get to go out with your audience and sort of find out what they thought. And Brian was very naughty. For about 3 weeks, he actually polled the audience to see what they thought.
One for me, one for her.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And the days that I softened her, I would lose my base.
You have a straw poll. That's very interesting.
And when I would make her absolutely, this strident, appalling, certain bitch, I would win more of the audience.
That
over.
Conviction would somehow
carry
them.
That conviction was very comforting to people.
Yeah, interesting.
And seductive.
When you talked about Brian adjusting his performance to the audience, it brought to mind something that I was thinking about. The performance I saw, there's a lot of humor in the play, a lot of very kind of funny, almost one-liners, in fact. And the audience was very warm. Everybody was obviously thrilled to be seeing this play and seeing you. And there was a lot of laughter. And I wondered if there's ever a time when there's too much and you actually somehow want to pull away from the humor or tell people to settle down a little bit.
You must have been there our first night.
Yes.
Because it was, we were all sort of blown away by the, because we hadn't had that kind of laughter in a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And you do sometimes feel like you want to rein the audience in. But you know what? You don't really have to rein the audience in with this play because the play itself reins
it
them in.
It begins to carry the momentum of seriousness.
As it's ratcheted up, people become absolutely silent and the listening becomes electric because they don't want to miss one clue.
Right.
You know.
Right, right, right. The mystery is obviously an important part of what creates the structure of this play, the suspense for the audience. And I know that in the Broadway run, you and the director agreed that you weren't going to know whether Father Flynn had done what you suspected him of or not. But on the other hand, the actor playing Father Flynn needed to know. He had to know what his story was. And in an earlier interview, you said that the minute the curtain came down on your last performance, he was going to tell you the answer you wanted to know. Did that happen?
Well, it didn't because I knew I was going to do the tour.
Oh, so
and you know what? And I've lost any interest in knowing.
Uh-huh. That somehow that need is no longer.
It's no longer there. And certainly as an actor, I have my theories on what's being played, but that's not true. Maybe 2 or 3 years from now,
when
over
you're really
a drink,
really not gonna
I'll go to Brian or to Chris and say, okay, I want to hear every little piece of the story.
Right. I would think you would want to know someday somehow. You've played Sister Aloysius a long time now, both the Broadway run and the tour has been how long?
We started in September, till May.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Very
old-fashioned way of being an actor, camping from one town to the next. What my question is, having lived with one character for this long, does any part of her become embedded in you? Is there any way that you change because you've inhabited her skin for so long?
My posture's gone to hell, and I've got to make myself improve my posture. I've also got to start sucking in my stomach. I let my stomach just go. It's a wonderful thing about playing an older nun.
In
a big habit. Right. You don't have to think about sucking it in.
Right.
And I think my voice is permanently huskier now because I drop her down into a
I worried about that. That seems
craggy. But you know what? It's my voice is smoky and husky anyway, and for Aloysius, I just make it a little more so.
Uh-huh.
But I've been very lucky to hold on to my voice throughout the run. I haven't had any vocal problems. I noticed that occasionally my speech is sometimes peppered with married and I pronounce things in a way that
accent.
As Doug Hughes calls it, my 5 points accent, because who knows what this accent is. I decided at some point that she grew up in South Boston and then moved as a young woman to the Bronx because I'm not good with accents.
So a little of everything.
It's a little bit of everything, right. And probably a little Tennessee thrown in too.
Right, right. But in terms of, it's obvious that you admire things about her that you don't think are you.
Right.
And I just wonder, as an actor, do you learn from your characters?
Well, there's certainly a discipline about Aloysius that I have great respect for. Every time I sign a check or an autograph or write a letter, I I keep thinking, do you think one can improve one's penmanship at 50? Can you start at 50 to learn how to?
I can answer that. No, you can't. Well, thank you, Terry Jones. I so much enjoyed talking to you, and good luck with the rest of the run.
And thank you.
So Doubt is playing through January 28th at the LaSalle Bank Theater.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another educed episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago news podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of January 15th, 2007. Get ready for the return of Crip Slam Sundays, courtesy of the Victory Gardens Theater Access Project. Crip Slam Sundays is going to be the innovative new series of Sunday night readings, presentations, and live performances by persons with disabilities. Some of you may remember the first set of series known as Disability Culture Sundays. Well, now it's back with the even bawdier name, Crip Slam Sundays. And that is really fun to say. The Victory Gardens 2007 Crip Slam Sunday series will be kicking off on January 28th with clothing optional. The show is one of many scheduled throughout the season, and for more information, you can click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. The Black Ensemble Theater Company has announced their 2007 season. Jackie Taylor, the founder and executive director of BET, announced the schedule for the company's 31st season, which is slated to be an ambitious lineup of five new productions to pay tribute to great African Americans in history. The season will kick off with Memphis Soul Stew, the story of Stax Records. Previews will be starting on Saturday, February 10th, so make sure you get a seat. Following that in April will be I Gotcha, the story of the great singer-songwriter Joe Tex, which was written by Joe Plummer. After that, coming in June will be Sounds So Good Makes You Wanna Holler. You gotta love that title. That, of course, is being written and directed by Jackie Taylor, and it will be highlighting some of Motown's most famous recording artists, including Marvin Gaye, Smokey Robinson, and The Temptations. Then in September will be Turn Out the Lights, the story of Teddy Pendergrass, which is pretty self-explanatory. Then closing out the season in November will be A Tribute to the Black Crooner. This musical tribute will be celebrating the life of some of the greatest black crooners in history, such as Nat King Cole, Billy Eckstein, and Johnny Mathis, just to name a few. Mary Zimmerman will be returning to the Northwestern stage in the first time in over a decade to direct William Shakespeare's comedy, Cymbeline. Zimmerman, the Tony Award-winning director, Goodman Theatre Artistic Associate, and Looking Glass Ensemble member, will be directing the production full of a student cast and a pretty interesting set that will be raking stage right to stage left, and that should certainly be interesting to see. Northwestern's production of Cymbeline will be starting on February 9th and running through the 18th at the Ethel M. Barber Theater. For more information, you can, of course, click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation has announced a $660,000 fund to help some of the smaller theaters around Chicago. Small nonprofit performing arts venues and some storefront theaters will be able to use some of the fund to bring their performance spaces up to Chicago's fire code specs. The Richard H. Driehaus Foundation will be administering the fund, which will be focused on companies with budgets of less than $500,000 to help begin any repairs and renovations that are needed around the building. And personally, coming from this Chicagoan, Chicago couldn't be happier. Well, thank you very much for listening to this educed episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote comes from Troilus and Cressida, Act 2, Scene 2. Modest doubt is called the beacon of the wise. Well, we can't thank you enough for listening to this little podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready to stick in your ears. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
You are listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago Review Podcast. Doubt, by John Patrick Shanley. Directed by Doug Hughes and produced by Broadway in Chicago at the LaSalle Bank Theater in downtown Chicago. It is rare that we see the original star from a Broadway show doing the national tour. Cherry Jones does just that. And she is magnificent as Sister Aloysius in John Patrick Shanley's superb parable, Doubt. The play is a masterpiece of writing, and Jones's performance a tour de force. I can't remember a more polished, succinct script than Shanley's. This is one of the finest plays of the last decade. It is a thought-provoking work that still has me thinking about it hours after leaving the theater. Set in a Catholic parish grade school in the Bronx in 1964, Doubt finds Sister Aloysius as the old-fashioned disciplinarian principal who rules her school with an iron fist. Her hands-on approach is intimidating, and Sister James, played by Lisa Joyce, finds out. The young nun uses modern techniques, including kindness and passion, to teach the eighth graders, and Sister Aloysius demands that she keep an eye out for any unusual behavior from either her male students or Father Flynn, played by Chris McGarry, in a charismatic, winning turn. Sister Aloysius is certain that Father Flynn has crossed the line with inappropriate behavior with at least one boy. Doubt deals with how we use our personal values and biases to possibly cloud our judgment about people. Does the end justify the means? Just because someone is intuitively certain doesn't mean the accusation is true. Without proof, doubt should prevail. Or should it? Sister James tells Sister Aloysius about a boy who seemed disturbed after a private talk in the rectory with Father Flynn. The boy also had liquor on his breath. From this information, Sister Aloysius is firmly convinced that Father Flynn is a child molester. The play deals with the hint of abuse, character assassination without conclusive proof, and the arrogance of a self-righteous, rigid-thinking nun. Should one take a stand, defying authority in the belief that one is certain? Also, how does one defend oneself from unproven accusations? Once events start, it is difficult to stop the effects. When doubt creeps into the mind of all concerned, the cruelty leads uncertainty, but the damage is already done. These moral dilemmas offer rich drama and thought-provoking theater. Smartly, Shanley doesn't neatly solve the issue. That is one of the show's great strengths. Cherry Jones is a master actor at the top of her craft, so don't miss this gem. It's a thought-provoking, beautiful piece of theater. Review by Tom Williams. Highly recommended. Doubt, by John Patrick Shanley, directed by Doug Hughes, and produced by Broadway in Chicago at the LaSalle Bank Theater in downtown Chicago, located at 18 West Monroe. Running time, 95 minutes with no intermission. Now running through January 28th. For tickets and information, call 312-902-1400.
Thank you very much for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Cherry Jones for allowing us the honor of interviewing her this week. I would also like to thank Mark Meyer and Ann Nicholson Weber. And most of all, I would like to thank you for listening. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.